Wickstrom. Over and over again, my Unitarian Universalism has proved not an impediment to my Christian faith, but a powerful aid. To be sure, the kind of Christian path I follow is not what many people mean by Christianity, but then I've never said I was a Pentecostal Christian or an Evangelical Christian. I am a Unitarian Universalist Christian. By this I mean that I am one who sees in the stories of Jesus the memories of a man whose union with the sacred was complete. He invited people into the mystery he called God. I see in him the clearest example of the kind of life I wish to live, but I have no problem understanding that other people find clearer examples elsewhere. I find in the person of Jesus a present-day companion on my spiritual journey, challenging me, encouraging me, and supporting me as I pursue a pathless quest into the heart of the mystery itself. When the Unitarian Universalist Association's Commission on Appraisal, on which I serve, was looking for a new topic of study several years ago, we set up an online survey and asked Unitarian Universalists to tell us what they thought could benefit from a period of serious reflection. We got over 300 suggestions of varying quality and of varying length. Some of them were, you know, two words, and some of them were basically essays. One respondent asked the commission to study how Unitarian Universalism was becoming too Christian and, quote, straying from its humanist roots, unquote. Now, I found this ironic because Universalism and Unitarianism were both Christian movements for about a century, at least, before either was influenced by humanism. Another respondent asked us to study, quote, how to take the Christian mockery out of the service. I grew up Catholic and enjoy the UU, but it would be uncomfortable bringing my family, end quote. Well, the commission eventually decided to study something else. These two anonymous Unitarian Universalists are an excellent illustration of a tension that we find in the current practice of Unitarian Universalism. As a religious movement, our history is rooted squarely in the Christian tradition. We acknowledge Christian teachings as one of the sources of our living tradition and our national covenant. Here we are on Sunday morning, and many of our institutions and traditions, the institutions and traditions of Unitarian Universalism, come directly from our Christian heritage, including the tunes, if not the words, to most of the hymns in the hymnal. And yet, of all the traditions from which we draw inspiration and guidance, the one we are most ambivalent about as a denomination is precisely Christianity. As the second respondent to the survey notes, it is not uncommon to hear Christianity derided, mocked, or otherwise put down in Unitarian Universalist congregations. And even if this is not true in a particular UU context, there is often still quite a bit of reactivity to Christian language, scripture, or theological concepts in Unitarian Universalist congregations. And so this paradox. Our faith is rooted in Christianity, and we aspire to be a religious community that respects the diversity of religious expressions, including Christianity. And yet, in practice, we find this incredibly difficult. So, why is that? Well, there are some important reasons why this present paradox exists in our congregations, including some good reasons for that reactivity around Christianity. To illustrate this point, let me ask you, how many of you here today were raised in a Christian church or in several Christian churches over the course of your upbringing? Okay, now keep your hand raised if the church in question was a Unitarian Universalist or Unitarian Universalist congregation. Yeah, there you go. As you can see, our congregation has a great many people who come from backgrounds in Christian churches, which were not Unitarian Universalist congregations. We are not alone in this as a congregation. Only about 10% of adult Unitarian Universalists were raised in Unitarian Universalist or Unitarian Universalist congregations. The other 90% are a mix of those who were raised in other Christian churches, those who were raised in another religion, or those who were raised without religion as a meaningful part of their upbringing. While the demographics are shifting toward that last group, which is often called the unchurched, the biggest group remains those who were raised in a Christian context. Now, why might someone who was raised in a Christian context end up here in our not necessarily Christian denomination? Usually, there is a reason people leave the religious community of their upbringing. Sometimes people simply feel in adulthood that their childhood religious community isn't a great fit anymore, but they have mostly positive associations and they leave gently. However, it is far more common for people to leave a religion because they have been hurt or offended in some way. There are as many stories of this pain as there are Unitarian Universalists who left their childhood faiths under less than ideal circumstances, but there are some elements that are fairly common. Many Unitarian Universalists report that their questions and doubts were not welcome in their childhood faiths. Others found that the stories and doctrines of their childhood faiths offended their sense of reason, and they simply couldn't believe what they were supposed to believe. Others find that some aspect of their identity was unacceptable to their childhood faith. This is a very common story among gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgender people, but also women in Christian denominations which did not allow for their leadership or for the ordination of women, and others who felt rejected in their previous religious community for other reasons. Many of those who come to Unitarian Universalism experienced the threat of hell somewhere along their way. Sometimes people were told that they were going to hell for not believing something they simply found they could not believe. Others for some part of their identity over which they had no control. It is hard to express in words the pain that this has caused for many Unitarian Universalists. Years of rejection, of judgment, of fear, of shame, all of which are associated with God and the religious community, and much of which ends up being internalized, contribute to driving many people out of their childhood faiths and into Unitarian Universalist congregations. What I am describing could also be called trauma. And trauma of any kind has certain predictable effects, one of which is reactivity. In other words, when we have been hurt deeply, things that remind us of the way we are hurt are likely to bring back all those feelings of fear, sadness, loneliness, shame, judgment. One of the natural human reactions to triggers of these kinds is to push the trigger away. Unitarian Universalism has often been called a community of religious refugees. And like all refugees who are fleeing some experience of pain, many of us are carrying deep wounds which can be very easily opened again. This story may be new to some of you, but I have thought about it a lot. Not only is it important to know as a UU minister, but it is in many ways the story of my own family. It has also been said that Unitarian Universalists are atheists with children. Well, in my case, I am the child of atheists. Actually, I am the child of two people who left their childhood Christian traditions, one Protestant and one Catholic, and found a new religious home in Unitarian Universalism. So I have witnessed these dynamics throughout my own life. But what I hadn't considered until recently was the collective story of Unitarian Universalism as a whole and its process of leaving Christianity. Today's sermon is the annual auction sermon. Every year at the spring auction, I have offered the chance to pick the topic of a sermon. And last spring, Teresa Krieger won. She asked me to consider not just how individuals in Unitarian Universalism have left previous Christian traditions, but also the history of the whole of Unitarian Universalism leaving Christianity, and how that might color our relationship to this faith of our collective as well as individual past. It's an interesting question, one I hadn't considered before and one I have been thinking about. I've come to see a parallel between the experiences of individual Unitarian Universalists and Unitarian Universalism itself. Unitarians and Universalists both considered themselves Christians and believed that they were simply practicing their understandings of the teachings of Jesus in the Bible, at least at the beginning of the two movements. Other Christians, however, disagreed. We can see this dynamic in the story of John Murray. So John Murray was a Methodist minister in England, and after reading the work of a Universalist, he came to believe in Universalism, which is the understanding that all people will eventually be saved. The Universalism comes from the term universal salvation. And he thought that this was just the most amazing theology he had ever encountered, and so he thought everybody would love to hear about it, and so he began preaching Universalism in his Methodist congregation. And his congregation was not so thrilled, and they fired him. And around the same time, his wife and child both got very sick and died. And in the process of trying to care for them medically while not having a job, he used up all his money and ended in debtor's prison. And in prison, he decided that if he ever was lucky enough to get out of prison, he would go to the New World and set up as a businessman and never be a minister again. So his brother-in-law sprung him from debtor's prison, and sure enough, he got on a ship that was bound for New York City. But it ran aground on a sandbar at a place called Good Luck Point, New Jersey, where there was a man named Thomas Potter who, about 10 years before, had a vision in which God told him that Thomas Potter had also converted to Universalism but wasn't a minister. And God had told Thomas Potter in this vision that he was sending a prophet and Potter should build a church. So Potter had built this little chapel on his land, and for 10 years had met just about every boat that came looking for his prophet, while his neighbors, of course, got more and more skeptical. So John Murray was among the group that went ashore from the stranded ship to get supplies, because they were supposed to be in New York by now and were out of food. And Thomas Potter took one look at John Murray and said, "Ah, you're my prophet! I'm so glad you've come at last." And John Murray said, "Well, I'm not doing that anymore. I'm done being a minister." And Thomas Potter pleaded with him because here's the prophet after all this time. And John Murray said, "No, no, no. This is on a Friday." So they eventually agreed that if the wind had not shifted, allowing the boat to leave, by Sunday morning, John Murray would preach in Thomas Potter's church. So the Friday evening came, wind hadn't changed. Saturday morning came, wind hadn't changed. By Saturday afternoon, Thomas Potter started asking John Murray for permission to send his servants out to tell everybody there was going to be a service the next day, because if nobody knew it, it would kind of be anticlimactic. So finally at 9 p.m., John Murray gave permission for the service the next morning to be publicized. And the next morning, a group of people gathered and John Murray preached and rediscovered the joy of ministry and went on to become the father of American Universalism. John Murray records this story in his journal, and in his journal he says that no sooner had the service ended Then the sailors came to tell him that the wind had shifted. Other Universalists met similar opposition, and Universalism was considered a dangerous heresy by the Christian mainstream. There's another famous Universalist minister named Hosea Ballou, and there's all these Brother Ballou stories, which are probably apocryphal, but they make great stories. So in one of these, Ballou was a circuit riding minister, so he had a bunch of churches and he would ride around between them, and this was a fairly common thing at the time. And so one day he was on the road with a circuit riding Baptist minister, and the Baptist minister said to Ballou, "Brother Ballou, if I were a Universalist, I could knock you over the head, steal your horse and all your belongings, and still go to heaven." And Ballou said to him, "Sir, if you were a Universalist, it wouldn't occur to you." Now, I don't tend to think that Universalists were all that perfect, perhaps, but this story does illustrate what was a common perception at the time, which was that if you took away the threat of hell, that would be the end of morality. Whereas Ballou taught that living a good life, living a life of love and respect for those around you, was its own reward, and therefore people who tried that would stay on the right path because it made one genuinely happy. It was the only thing that made you genuinely happy. So, Universalists by other Christians were considered dangerous and probably not real Christians. The Unitarian movement had a similar experience. Especially, the Unitarian movement as a whole had this experience in a way that the Universalist movement didn't quite. In that, in the United States, and particularly in New England, the Unitarian movement started as a sub-movement, if you will, a group of like-minded people within the larger Congregationalist movement. And at the time, the Congregationalist movement was the established church in New England, which meant every little town had a Congregationalist church, and that was the church of the town. In fact, the earliest buildings in New England villages were the meeting house, which was the town hall from Monday through Saturday, and the church on Sunday. And at the beginning, all of the folks in Congregationalist churches were Puritans, were Calvinists, and so they all had a particular theological things in common. But over time, the Unitarians, they weren't called the Unitarians yet, they began by being called the Liberals. This group of people began to think slightly differently. For one thing, they believed that you should apply your reason, your mind, to the study of the scriptures. And they did this, and this led them to believe that the doctrine of the Trinity was wrong, that God was singular, and that Jesus, although still the Messiah, was not God. They also believed that human beings had some inherent goodness to them and were not the totally depraved human beings of Calvinist theology. And the Unitarians, they weren't called the Unitarians yet, the Liberals, really wanted to stay within the Congregationalist church. They didn't see themselves, their project, as creating a new church. They just saw, you know, that the point of Congregationalism was for everybody to read the scriptures and to see in them what they saw in them and to follow that, and that's what they were trying to do. And in fact, the Liberals tended to downplay their differences from the more orthodox factions of the church because they really did believe that congregations should stay together and we're all in this together, and so let's talk about what we have in common. But the orthodox side of the Congregationalist family began to see the emerging Unitarian theology not just as wrong but as dangerous. And they thought if people heard this, that it would lead them off the straight and narrow, and public morality would break down, and everything would fall apart. And so the Orthodox movement began to pull away from relationships with the liberal movement. Orthodox ministers stopped exchanging pulpits with liberal ministers, which was a very common practice at the time. And congregations began to pull away from each other. And within each congregation, sometimes the liberal faction and the Orthodox faction would call two different ministers to the same congregation, and you had these moments where the faction that got there first would barricade the pulpit against the other so that their minister could preach. And at the time, in these congregations, you'd have hour-long services followed by lunch, well, several hour-long services followed by lunch, followed by another several hour long service. And the minister stopped leaving the pulpit to get lunch because the other faction would take it over. And eventually, the Congregationalist churches in New England all split down the middle, almost 50-50, one at a time. What it means to be Congregationalists, as is still true in our congregations today, is that the decision-making body is the congregation. So there was no higher authority that could affect this separation than the congregation. So congregation after congregation split. And their property, their buildings, the Bible, the communion silver, everything that made the church, they landed in court over and over again about who would get all of that. And so you had these congregations that, until very recently, had been worshiping together and had been covenanted to in loving relationships, suing each other over the legacy of the church. The Unitarians, by the way, tended to win those court cases because they tended to occupy the building. What generally happened was that the Orthodox faction would take the Bible and leave and go worship somewhere else, and so the court generally gave the property to the ones occupying the building. And within a generation, we stopped doing communion regularly. And the Congregationalist churches on their side of the split are still angry that we took the communion silver in court and then stopped using it, and it's in museums all over America. Anyway, the point of this story, there are several points to this story. One is that this was an incredibly painful experience for the Unitarians and for the Orthodox, and also that the Unitarians didn't want to split. They, in the beginning, they wanted to stay in these Congregationalist churches, but the Orthodox Congregationalists said, "You're not real Christians, and so you can't be part of our movement anymore." Our first reading this morning comes from the next generation of Unitarians, those who were profoundly influenced by the Transcendentalist movement. Theodore Parker, as I said, was both a Unitarian minister and a Transcendentalist. And in the sermon that today's reading comes from, he argued that some things in Christianity are permanent and others are transient. His radical idea was that Jesus himself was not necessary to Christianity. Jesus was special to Parker in that he lived a life perfectly in tune with God, but as you can hear in today's reading, Parker believed that this perfect communion with God was available to anyone. He believed that if Jesus had not taught as he did, someone else would have managed a life perfectly in tune with God and would have shared the same ideas. So Parker was not considered a Christian, even by his fellow Unitarians, many of whom were appalled by his ideas, and certainly not by the mainstream of Christianity. But even in Parker, you can hear the reverence for the Christian tradition and for Jesus himself that for Parker meant that he was still a Christian. Our other reading comes from contemporary Unitarian Universalist minister Eric Walker Wickstrom. And here, too, we can hear this tension between his own Christian faith and identity and his sense that others might not consider him to be Christian at all. Unitarianism and Universalism both saw themselves as Christian movements, at least until the beginning of the 20th century. Yet they were surrounded by a Christian mainstream which told them they were wrong, dangerous, and had strayed too far to be considered real Christians anymore. The same rejection that has been experienced by so many individual Unitarian Universalists has also been experienced by our faith as a whole. And so Christianity has become for us collectively that tradition which meted out judgment and condemnation, which would not have us even when we still wanted to be considered part of the fold, and which turned away from the fellowship we would have maintained if we could. It is for all these reasons, I believe, that Unitarian Universalist congregations and individuals find it so hard to find a place for the Christian tradition amid the diversity of our theology and practice. And yet, as hard as it is, that is precisely the commitment we have made as a religious community. We have promised to affirm and promote justice, equity, and compassion in human relations, acceptance of one another, and a free and responsible search for truth and meaning, and the goal of world community with peace, liberty, and justice for all. Since these commitments were agreed to in the 80s, we have always interpreted them as demanding that we find a way to respect theological diversity in our congregations. It is this commitment to a freedom of belief and respect for one another's beliefs that is at the heart of who we want to be as Unitarian Universalists. We also believe that the ability to do that on a global scale is necessary to the creation of the world community of peace, liberty, and justice, to which we are also committed. As it is true that we, individually and collectively, have experienced the pain of religious judgment and rejection, we have promised not to practice religious judgment and rejection. And though Christianity may have been the religion in our individual and collective past that has caused the most justified anger, still our covenant calls us to practice open-heartedness and to resist the temptation to religious condemnation. This does not mean that we cannot speak out against religious abuse. But not all of the Christian tradition is abusive. Not everything in Christian theology or practice is harmful. In fact, there is much of wisdom and value in the Christian tradition. Furthermore, though avoidance is a natural response to trauma, it is not necessarily a very helpful one. Trauma that is avoided and repressed never has a chance to heal. If we stop at avoidance, we will simply always be triggered by the same things. To get our triggers to have less power requires facing them, working through them, and becoming desensitized over time. In the case of religious trauma, if we simply avoid anything that reminds us of any tradition that has hurt us, it still has the same power to hurt us forever. However, if we find ways to engage with that tradition, we can work through our trigger points and find ways of reducing their power. We can work through the pain and find ways to let it go. Our own healing requires that we not simply stop at the point of reactivity, but that we move through that to a less raw place. And so, to that end, here are a few things that I find valuable in the Christian tradition. The Universalists saw in the Christian tradition love as the central attribute of God. And this is something that I still value, that the most important thing you could say about God is that God is a God of love. Another way to say that is that the most powerful force in the universe is the force of love. And this is an idea that I have found incredibly powerful and inspirational in my life. The Unitarian side of our tradition saw as vitally important the idea that human beings are made in the image of God. Now, Christian theologians, from the time that those, Christian and Jewish theologians both, from the time those words have written, have debated what it means by the image of God. Does it mean that God looks like a human being, or does it mean something else? And it seems like every theologian takes this to mean whatever they think is most important. So those theologians who think reason is most important think that that's what the image of God means. Those who think love is most important think that that's what the image of God means. But the thing that all this whole tradition has in common is that human beings being made in the image of God means that there is something good in the vital, fundamental nature of human beings. And Unitarians saw that as one of the most important things about Christianity, and it has been a part of Christianity that has had a powerfully positive influence on the world. If your fellow human beings contain the image of God, then there is a reverence that comes with that and a respect, at least theoretically, that can be very powerful. Another thing that I value in the Christian tradition is the insistence in the scriptures of a focus on justice. Jesus spent a lot of his time telling his disciples and his followers to take care of the poor, and so did the Hebrew prophets that the Christian tradition also honors. And this insistence that justice is centrally important to God has inspired many movements since, including the civil rights movement. And finally, I find this fascinating idea in Christianity. When Jesus is asked what the most important commandment is, he says that you shall love God with all of your heart and with all of your mind and with all of your strength. And the second is like it. You shall love your neighbor as yourself. First of all, there's just the idea that one should love the people around you as yourself, which also implies that you have to love yourself well, or else this is not a commandment to do well by your neighbor. But I also think it's interesting that these two commandments are said by Jesus to be like each other. In other words, serving God requires that we serve each other, and loving God requires that we love each other. And the best way to love the whole is to love carefully each of the parts of the whole individuals around us. So those are the things in the Christian tradition that I find inspirational and powerful. You may have others yourself. May we find the ways to bring the pain of our religious pasts to healing in the love of our community. And may we recommit ourselves to that freedom in our own search and that respect for the views of others to which our faith calls us. Amen. Please join me in a brief time of silence. And I invite you now into a time of reflection together.
I just wanted to thank you, Erica, for explaining all of that. That was a fascinating talk, and I feel even more strongly our loss at your leaving. Thank you.
Thank you.
I guess I should preface my remark by the fact that, at least as far as I can remember, the Universalist Church I grew up in used the Nicene Creed, which of course includes the stuff about, you know, Christ being the Son of God and whatnot. And when I was a kid, at least this is my memory, again, maybe I'm inventing this years later, I sort of envied the Unitarians because they didn't have to have all that mumbo-jumbo. the reason I mention this is I read often in UU World that one of the ways that the national UU movement is trying to broaden its appeal is by using more traditional religious language and talking more about God and Christ and so on. And I've also read exactly what Erica was citing, that there's a growing number of people who are unchurched. And I just wonder whether if we're trying to make ourselves more accessible, are we going to turn away the possibility of unchurched people coming to visit us because we use this language, which maybe they associate with stuff like the Nicene Creed and religious mumbo-jumbo that they can't believe in anymore?
Actually, the unchurched, the nuns, if you will call them, N-O-N-E-S, the research shows that those folks are actually looking for the language of reverence and looking for a more spiritual... It makes sense, right? The people that don't like language about God are the people who have been hurt by language about God. People who don't like the Christian creeds are the people who don't like them the most are the people for whom that was what you were supposed to believe in childhood. People who were raised without any religion, who are looking for a religion, are looking for religion. They're looking for that reverence and spirituality. That doesn't necessarily mean that I sort of feel like we should have an honest expression of who we are rather than a marketing campaign. But in terms of appealing to the unchurched, if you will, the language of reverence, actually the current generation of unchurched, that's what they're looking for, according to the research. Which I didn't do, but that's what the research said.
I think opposite of nuns is alls, and I would be an all in that my parents divorced, and I lived with my dad for a while and kind of went with his religion, and then I lived with my mom for a while who didn't really have one. But I had to go to a Catholic school for a year, and even though we were probably one of the poorest families in town, my mother scraped every dime together. So I could go because I kept getting beat up in the public school. So she thought I'd be safer in the Catholic school. And I rode the bus every day to the Catholic school, and we always passed this Unitarian church. And one day I said, what is different about the Unitarian church than the Catholic church? And one of the girls looked at me and they said, they don't believe in God. And I'm like, you're kidding me, because I went to Mass every Wednesday, and I couldn't believe that there was actually a church in there that didn't believe Jesus was, you know, the whole Holy Trinity thing. And that's when I started getting a little bit disgusted with my religious upbringing, because I kind of already believed that. We talked about that in a circle meeting, that I think I was born liberal. I really do believe I was born liberal because they were teaching me things in mass that I did not believe. And as I grew older, I kept going to the different Christian churches and I was like, this is not what I believe. So when I discovered UU about 10 years ago, it was the most beautiful. I mean, it meant so much to me to find a church that believed what I believed. So I'm one of those people, like you said in your sermon, that I was hurt by religion and by Christianity. And that's one of the reasons I come to UU.
Thank you. So, the people who currently have their hands up and then we're going to stop. So, Teresa and Jean Marie and Diane. So, Teresa first.
Hey, thanks for the sermon.
Thank you. Yeah, great. Thank you, Teresa.
I think my feeling is we definitely have this hurt and reactivity, and it's really hard to act out of hurt and act out of love at the same time. So, it always has felt very important to me to heal that hurt from my religious past and also to acknowledge the things that I do value about my Christianity and my own ongoing sense of Christian identity. It feels like ideally we should have a place for people. We don't have beliefs. We have a creed or a covenant of how we want to be together, which should leave room for people who still want to honor their own Christian tradition or what they bring from that. And it often feels like there's a contempt for Christianity that makes it hard to be inclusive or feel included. It just feels like a hurt that's important for us to work on healing in order to live up to our own best version of who we want to be. So thank you.
Thank you. Jean Marie?
One of the most helpful things that I was fortunate to do when I first started going to UU Church was participate in a group. And I don't know what the real title was, but I've always thought of it as Exorcising the Ghosts of Your Religious Past. That might have been the real title, I don't know. But it was great because I had struggled for so long, having been raised Catholic and really wanting to have spirituality in my life but not able to bring so much that was in the Catholic Church. Anyway, it allowed for a lot of that healing. It allowed for the processing of what can I glean from my Catholic upbringing that I still value, and you know, how can I accept that part of it, because once you're Catholic, you're always a Catholic in some senses. It's a cultural identity in many ways, but then to find UUism was fabulous because it was more aligned with what my beliefs were. And so I know that sounds like maybe that might be a good thing for people to participate in here.
There's a curriculum called Owning Your Religious Past, which I taught a couple years ago. It's probably time to do again.
I just want to say thank you for talking about the very positive things you've gained from Christianity. I mean, I really feel that too, having grown up evangelical and my parents very much heavy into missions, which has its negative side in my perspective of trying to convert people that may be in a very good space where they are. But they also have a very much a social justice aspect, which I think I've benefited from. So I think there's some really good there.
Yes, thank you. Thank you all. I invite you to continue the conversation over coffee. In the meantime, we're going to sing hymn number 276, O Young and Fearless Prophet. Please rise in body or spirit.